I'm a god.
Well, what if there is no tomorrow?
I'm a god.
There wasn't one today.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of It's Time to Rewind, a podcast stuck in its own time loop right along with the movies we discuss. And this season, we're taking a look at Groundhog Day, After Day, After Day, After Day. I'm your host, Bubba Wheat, from Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights, and in this episode, we're discussing Phil's 33rd Groundhog Day that starts at 79 minutes and 20 seconds, with Phil giving Ned Ryerson an awkwardly long hug, and ends at 81 minutes and 6 seconds, with a nurse saying, "Sometimes people just die," and Phil replying, "Not today." Today, I'm joined with joined by Nolan, author of The Bargain Bin Review. How are you doing today?
I am doing just fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, other than, you know, the people that just decided to start mowing.
Yeah.
in my yard, which I was not expecting. And, you know, you keep telling me that you don't hear it, so I sound like a crazy person to you before we start recording. But hopefully that doesn't affect things too much.
But you're sounding a lot more normal now than you were pre-show, where you sounded like you were just hanging on. Like, we're going to do the show now. Like, it's okay. Well, we'll do the show. Yeah. So, excellent.
All right. So, I feel like, you know, jumping into the loop here, I feel like in this section of the movie, like these past 15 minutes have really been like an emotional roller coaster where there's a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And even in this specific loop today, you know, we start off with kind of a high and then we go down to a low with, you know, it starts out with this long, awkward hug between Phil and Ned Ryerson.
Yeah, it's hard. Where I'm struggling with is not diving too much into the next episode, which is the next day, kind of day 34 we've got here. But yeah, I feel like it starts off with a bit of a accumulation of the past few days where we're seeing Phil kind of in this self-improvement, but it's in a very tangible way where he is becoming a better piano player and he's learning ice sculpture and he's doing all these things. And he's kind of, if you see this curvature of like, he is being nice to people and he is just doing some self-improvement. And that includes embracing the guy that he has been awful to, or just, you know, or very dismissive of throughout the whole film, Stephen Tobolowsky's Ned Ryerson.
Yeah, and I think it's really incredible, whatever you think about this, because the last time that we actually saw Ned in the movie was when Phil just decks him.
Right.
And so this is the exact opposite of punching him, but he still gets the same effect.
It is, and it's rewatching it, I'm kind of like, It kind of strays into some gay panic territory, but it's not overt. And it is an oddly intimate kind of hug that he gives him. Mm-hmm. So
I love just the, you know, the expression on Ned's face. And, you know, honestly, I know that talking about the 80s and 90s comedies, you do get a lot of gay panic humor. And I can see, you know, a little bit of that in this, but I think it's more just, you know, ignoring that aspect of it, just this forced intimacy with someone that you haven't seen in 10 years.
Yes, I would agree. And I don't want to, I mean, I, like I said, it kind of toes the line of it. And but I don't want to say like, oh, this is aged badly or anything, because, yeah, the real humor in it is the awkwardness of just how intimate the hug is. And it's kind of, it's not sexual, and it's not. It's just very. It's far more intimate than you would be with an acquaintance that you haven't seen in a decade or so. So,
especially since, you know, everything that we've seen with Ned is he always has this ulterior motive that he just is using this as a pretense to self-fill insurance.
Exactly.
And I also love just the fact that, especially in this section of the movie, this is all about Phil bettering himself, becoming a better person, becoming a nicer person. But in this moment, we get to see that Phil is still Phil.
Yes.
He still has that snark, that sense of humor that hasn't completely gone away. He's just using it. He's just expressing it differently.
I would agree. So yeah, there's still a little layer of that in there. And if it hasn't been discussed in the past, and I imagine it has, you know, Stephen Tobolowsky, who plays Ned Ryerson, the guy is – he's one of like the all-time great that guys. He's got like over 200 films to it and like credits to his name. And he's been in a lot of like big show, like big movies and big shows and such. But this is the one I think he's most famous for, and you get it. He's great in this movie. I know we're focusing specifically on this scene and this day, but I just wanted to have the opportunity to put that out there that, you know, he's long been one of my favorite actors. I get psyched when he shows up in things, and he is a scene stealer in this movie. So
yeah, even in you know, just this brief 30-second scene, and I think, you know, in the entire runtime of the movie, he only has like maybe 5 or 6 minutes of screen time. This is only the fifth time that he's appeared on screen, and like I said, the last time was just a few seconds of him getting punched.
Right.
And this one, he also gets, you know, a little bit of physical comedy. Just the way that he runs away from Phil is just hilarious. Like, he's holding onto his briefcase, and he's like hunched over, and it's just the most weird, awkward looking run that is so hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic.
And then, you know, we switch gears. And then we go into this, you know, very short but very powerful emotional arc. And it starts off with, you know, Phil seeing this the old homeless man that we've seen. This is the sixth time that we've seen the homeless man. We get the emotional piano music. And I think it's great, too, that the score – we do just get a few seconds of this emotional, soft, just the piano, especially considering that
which he'll play later. Like, I don't remember if it's part of the song that he's learning, but I believe that's the same song he plays. Not to spoil the movie for anyone, but if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen Groundhog Day, I don't know what you're doing. But at the end of the day, when he plays piano for everyone, I think that's part of. I think there's melodies or aspects of the. I'm not a music person. I'm just making up words now. There's aspects of that tune that he plays during that song later in that perfect day.
Actually, that's something that I didn't look up. We did talk a lot about that. I talked a lot with David Brooke, and just the previous episodes. We dove into the pieces that he did play, but this one it's only like a few seconds, and my ear is not good enough to know if that is the Rachmaninoff that he plays at the end, or if this is just a random piece of score.
Mm. I believe it is. I'm sure somebody will leave a comment and tell us, kind of school us on it. Bars? Is that a music word? I don't know music. we'll go with that. There's a reason why I didn't sign up for any of the ones where he's taking piano lessons. So, But yeah, this sequence with the old man in the alley is amazing.
Well, this one today is him in the hospital. We'd actually, right. I mean, we get to see him just for just a couple seconds, and in front of the building where he comes up to him and he says, "Father," and he's like, "Let's get you someplace warm." And then it cuts straight to the hospital with him talking to the nurse. And well, like one of the great background details is if you look right behind Phil, there's a kid in a wheelchair with his leg in a cast. And that's the same boy that he will catch in just 2 days later in his final Groundhog Day falling from a tree.
I did not catch that. That is awesome.
So that's one thing that's, you know, set up ahead of time. So this day we actually don't see a whole lot of the man. This is mostly Phil talking with the nurse.
Yes. It is a very certainly much more so than I remember it. You know, kind of revisiting it. I remember this whole sequence being a bit more involved, and I know we're only talking about the first half today, but yeah, it's straight to the hospital and learning from the nurse almost right away that the old man, he asks, "Oh, how's the old guy doing?" And he's, "Oh, he's passed away." And he's shocked, and he's like, "Well, he was just old. It was just his time." And then he can't accept. He wants to go storming and back, and he wants to see the chart. And that's when she gives the final line when he's looking at we don't see the dead body, but we're assuming he's looking at the dead body, and mm-hmm. she tells him, "Sometimes people just die," to which he responds, "Not today."
Yeah, and I think that line is very powerful, especially coming from Phil in this movie, because he just, and again, referring back to just a few days ago, him saying that, him proclaiming that he's a god.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe not fully believing that, but basically believing that he can do anything given enough time, given enough repetitions. He can accomplish anything that he wants. And this is him in a mindset of making Punxsutawney a better place. And so this is like a challenge for him. This is like, no, not if I have anything to say about that, because I am the god of Punxsutawney February 2nd.
Yeah. And you've touched on something that I think is vitally important to this story and to this character arc, is that the last few, you know, the sequence leading up to this is, as we mentioned, was all about his self-improvement. He's being nice. He's making an effort to be nicer to people, but he's learning to play piano, and he's learning to ice sculpture, and he's doing that kind of investment. But this is the first time we really see him acting outside of his self. Like his reaction to, from the moment when even the hug with Ned is not really, it's still like about him being like, "Oh, I'm going to be nice to this guy," but seeing the old
I'm
man,
I'm
going to
kill him with kindness.
Yeah, exactly. But seeing the old man and his reaction to it is really to, you know, he brings him to the hospital to get some care and such. Is really the first time where he's acting out like, very actively acting outside of his own self. I don't want to say completely self-interest, because there's something to be said about, you know, personal growth of learning a skill like playing piano or ice sculpture. But this is, I think, more so than any of those things we see in that lead up, he's thinking beyond his own needs, wants, skills, abilities, growth to someone else.
Yes, helping this old man does absolutely nothing for Phil once he leaves Punxsutawney.
Right.
And the only thing before this, which it is interesting because it also is him helping the old man in a different way, is the first thing that we see him do after his night with Rita, like his platonic night with Rita, is he gives the old man a wad of cash.
Yes. I knew there was, and we should probably, as a quick recap of those first five, I wasn't sure where the order was, other than some of them were clearly earlier in the rotation. You know, the first time he walks by him, he makes a big show of like, I'm checking my pockets for change and I don't see any. And then the second and third times, it's less of a show and he's more of a kind of a blow off. And the fourth time, he kind of jumps out of the way like, you know, he's startled by him. But yeah, that last time, and I wasn't sure where that fit into the scheme of things, where he just kind of gives him whatever, like the wad of cash out of his pocket, and he's just like, and just moves on.
Yeah, like the first three or four times were his first three or four days.
That's what I figured, yeah.
And then it skips ahead a lot, and then the wad of cash was just a few days ago, right after him, you know, turning the corner and deciding to be better.
Right. And it's and I think it's a nice comparison of, you know, what does being nice mean? Like that fifth time, it's just I'm going to throw some cash at the problem, and then, you know, here you go. Here's some cash. Knock yourself out. Whereas on this sixth time, this day, he's kind of like, no, I'm going to stop. I'm going to focus on you. I'm going to get you some care because you look like you need some care.
I think that is an important distinction, especially for Phil, because the first thing that he does is gives money to the homeless man, which in the within the context of Phil's Groundhog Day, money is meaningless. He's basically making for him an empty gesture, which it seems like it's nice, and yeah, that might, you know, improve his day a little bit. But for Phil, it's not costing Phil anything other than a couple seconds, because the next day he's going to have that money back. But this is him becoming more emotionally invested in this. And this is something that, you know, he is actually making a connection with this man. And it's not just something that he can toss money at. This is something that, you know, this is a man that the town has forgotten, basically. And so much so that even Phil has forgotten him. And this is about Phil not forgetting him. This is about Phil realizing that this is an actual man and a person.
Right. And I think it's that realization, which I think is key to this sequence, because his reaction is kind of surprising. And I would argue that it's probably – I imagine when they talked about on the set or something, it was probably surprising to Phil as well that he was so upset and that he was cared so much. He's like the right of the bay. He's like, how could that be? And I need to see his chart. And he goes storming and back. And you could make all the arguments of, you know, there's no consequences for him storming and back. Like if it gets thrown in jail, it doesn't matter, you know, because he's in restricted areas of the hospital, whatever, you know. But his reaction is a completely emotional one. So, yeah, fascinating. This scene and the next day, I think, are vitally important to this movie.
Yeah, and then one other thing that I do want to point out in this scene that you mentioned that we don't actually see the dead body. And I think that's an interesting decision because they did specifically on one day after he jumped off the tower, showed a close-up of Phil's dead body. And I'm curious what the decision-making process was for that, to where they if I had to guess, I think that seeing Phil's dead body has less of an impact because we know that that death is going to be undone in just, you know, the next second, really. Where this one, even though his death is going to be undone temporarily, once Phil leaves Groundhog Day, his death will be permanent.
Right. I have two thoughts about that. One may be coming straight out of my buttocks. years ago I listened to, I've heard the behind the scenes stories of making this movie. You get those kind of discussions, like the oral histories, and actually Stephen Tobolowsky had a very, very good podcast that he used to do, telling stories, and one of them was inevitably the story of him doing, Groundhog Day and being on the set for that and such. So some of this may be speculation in my mind, but I get the impression that there was a fair bit of improvisation, partially, yes, because it's Bill Murray, but also was Ivan Reichman the director? Harold Ramis. I apologize. I sometimes get them mixed up because they're often in similar same projects and such. That at the time he was really into reading Buddhists and the Buddhist philosophies and stuff. So I think I almost wonder if this was this whole sequence. And by this sequence, I mean not just this bit with the homeless man, but also next episode's second half of this kind of homeless man the next day was almost like a on the set ad. On the fly, like something they decided that the movie needed. Again, rampant speculation on my part, which probably could be very easily disproved. But I've always gotten the impression that the set and the making of this movie had a lot of those kind of elements where they just changed things, changed the demeanor of things, the tone of things on the fly. As they were making it. The other thought I have is more just strictly artistic where, yeah, we saw, you see, as you mentioned, you see Phil dead and you see his dead body because I think you know he's coming back a second later and they want to show you, okay, yeah, he's dead for the next 8 hours or whatever and then the day starts over and he's right back. Where with this one, you really want to stay with Phil and you want to stay with his reaction. And maybe they just simply decided that that showing the dead body, even if it was like a foot or whatever, would be enough of a distraction to take you away from Phil. Or they improv the whole thing and the guy wasn't on the set at all and there was no one to see. So,
yeah,
you know.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was – maybe not so much that he wasn't available, but maybe that they just didn't have the time to do the makeup for that. And then, I do have a couple other little details that I noticed while rewatching this. I mentioned the kid with the broken leg, but I also noticed you can see in the background through the window, it looks like a handful of groundhog drawings, like on a cork board in the little windowed office right behind Phil, I believe. And I think that they're interesting because they look too good to be children's drawings, but they also look like they are drawings on paper pinned to a cork board rather than like actual framed art.
Okay.
And I just thought that was worth mentioning. And then the other thing that that I think is worth mentioning as well. You know, a lot of these movies by minutes get into all a lot of the background actors, and I haven't really done that very much, but I am pretty sure that this nurse is the only non-white character in this movie with a speaking role in the entire film. And so I at least wanted to give, you know, her a shout out, and the actress playing her, her name is Diane B. Shaw, and she only has a handful of acting credits, and most of them are clearly like featured extras, like this one, like nurse and like reporter number two, but she is still getting roles as late as she had a couple roles in 2019. So, you know, it seems like she's still acting. So I at least wanted to take a minute and give her a shout out.
Nice.
But that's, I think, pretty much all the notes that I have on this day. Was there anything else that you wanted to mention about this specific day before we get into the next day?
Nope, that will do it for me for this day.
All right, well, why don't you go ahead and take a minute to let our listeners know a little bit about, I guess, your book, since I know you don't really have any online projects going on at the moment.
That is true. Thank you. I am Nolan, and I am currently working on manuscripts to be a proper novelist, but if probably more of interest to you is that a couple of years ago, reviews of bad movies that I had written back in my days when I was working, I was doing the Bargain Bin Review, and I was one of the bloggers on Your Face with Jason Soto, who was a previous guest on this here show. So I wrote a book called The Bargain Bin Review, taking on the movies no one wants to touch or no one else will touch. It is a collection of 90 handcrafted artisanal reviews of bad movies, all put together in paper form. So it would be like a website that you can carry around in your bag and not have to turn on or recharge to watch. Along with those reviews, I have these little vignettes that follows my own kind of personal journey, these little biographical bits of my personal journey to explain why I would watch bad movies. So that is available now on Amazon. That's The Bargain Bin Review by Scott Nolan, which is the name my parents gave me. If you try searching for Nolan, I don't think you're going to find anything. But now I kind of want to know. Let's look in all departments. Nope, you get a collection of t-shirts for that have Nolan on it. It's not quite the same. So check that out. That would make me really happy, and I think you would enjoy it. Thank you.
All right. And as always, I am Bubba Wheat, and you can find me at FlightsTightsAndMovieNights.com. You can find me on Twitter at Bubba Wheat, and you can find this show, It's Time to Rewind, on Anchor.fm, as well as anywhere else you listen to podcasts. We also have a Facebook group, It's Time to Rewind, a time loop group, where you can come on and discuss episodes as they're released. And we also have discussion about other time loop movies and TV shows and a lot of other stuff. So it's a lot of fun. And I also wanted to mention, you know, even though we're recording this in the beginning of August, this episode is scheduled to be released on the day that my second daughter will be born. Unless, of course, she comes in early. You know, who knows how that's going to go. I got you, baby. Hey, this is Bubba Weave from the future, just chiming in to say, yes, she did, in fact, come early. 3 weeks early, but she's doing well. She's happy and healthy. I got you, baby. But it's, you know, hopefully when this comes out, I will be a dad for the second time over.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
I didn't know there was another a little wheat on the way. So that is awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. And so I will see you next time. I got you,
I'm a god. Well, what if there is no tomorrow? I'm a god. There wasn't one today.
Sometimes people just die.
Not today.